Do-do-do-do-do.
Logoria.
Welcome to the Logoria Podcast, the arts and entertainment podcast where we word vomit about movies, shows, music, and on this episode for the very first time, books. My name's Clark Hubbard.
My name is Katie Chappell.
My name is Elizabeth Caldwell.
Liz, what are you doing here? You've never been on an episode of Logoria before.
You texted me and I showed up.
Okay, that's true, but I was really wondering why you're here instead of other people. Katie, would you like to?
Would I like to take it? Well, Corey is
Rest
Corey.
In peace.
No. Corey did not die. Anyone listening, Corey, okay, that is probably more accurate. But anyway, death comes to us all. Emma cannot be with us this semester, which is very unfortunate, and we'll miss her a lot. But we're really excited to have Liz here.
Absolutely. Liz, would you like to introduce yourself, say a little bit about yourself, what you're doing in college, future aspirations, favorite dog?
Important. Well, the most important thing is my favorite dog, and that is my dog named Piper.
Piper.
A good dog name.
As in Billy Piper?
Sure. Yes.
Okay. Pied Piper?
Pied Piper, yes. Piper no
Peter
piping.
Piper. Yeah. You're right.
She is a Great Pyrenees, and she is perfect. And what I'm doing here at Union is graduating in like 20 minutes, and I am trying, as fast as possible. And I am a creative writing major and a journalism minor, and I'm just here kicking it and writing a bunch of stuff and reading a bunch of stuff and trying to do good at all of the schooling and failing.
Absolutely. Katie, you want to introduce yourself for this season?
Yeah. I'm Katie Chappell. I'm a literature and French double major. Don't ask me to speak French. I don't know how. So I'm really good at everything, as you can tell, and doing great. Yeah, that's a little bit about me. Fun fact, I used to be a clown.
There we go.
There it is, yeah.
Amazing. We'll talk more about that in our fifth section on clowns. And I am Clark Hubbard. I am a senior political science and creative writing double major. I am the A&E editor of The Cardinal and Cream, through which this podcast is being published. Thanks to The Cardinal and Cream, thanks to Union University, and thanks to Jackson, Tennessee.
I thought you were going to say Dub Oliver.
Thanks
which
to
is
Dub Oliver.
What you really
we are
should have said.
We are grateful for Dub Oliver. Dub Oliver is probably my favorite president.
Dub.
Okay. Anyways.
That was good.
Without further ado, with those glorious introductions done, let's get into the bulk of our program.
Yeah.
Starting out with our movies. What movie have we watched this summer, the past few weeks? Liz, you want to lead us out here?
Well, at first I thought that the best movie I watched all summer was The Incredibles 2, which should still be being talked about. But recently I watched the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society on Netflix, and it was absolutely phenomenal. It has to do with a writer who goes to introduce herself to a book club over in the island of Guernsey, post-World War II. It's like right after the war. And she learns a lot about all of these people. The actress is Lily James, and it was absolutely phenomenal. I loved every minute of it.
So, could you say the name of the movie three times fast?
Yes, it is The Guernsey Literary Potato Peel Pie Society, The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society, and The Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
That's incredible. Wow.
That's really good.
Liz Caldwell, everyone.
I have a question. Mm-hmm. Can we know why it is called, what is it, the Petite Potato
the
Pie?
The Guernsey Petite Pie Society.
Yes. it is because that is actually a fundamental part of the movie.
Okay.
And they do mention that it is a mouthful. But it is because the Guernsey Literary Potato Peel Pie Society.
Right, yeah.
They were trying to hide a roasted pig from the Germans during the German occupation in Guernsey. And they, in order to be considered not illegal, they lied and called themselves a book club. And one of the members of their book club was drunk at the time, and he mentioned a potato peel pie. So in order to cover it up, Jessica Brown Findlay's character says they're the Guernsey Literary and Potato Peel Pie Society.
Wow, that's really fascinating.
That is incredible. Mm-hmm. What's the mood of this film? Because it seems like it can be really quirky, or just, like, sort of funny, or, like, this weird rom-com? What are we getting into?
It's kind of a historical romance, I want to say, but there are funny parts of it. It's extremely compelling and engaging. Really good.
Interesting. Are there any parallels you can draw between another movie or a book or anything at all similar? What elements do you see in something else?
Honestly, no. And that's why I liked it so much. I thought it was going to be kind of just another post-World War II or, like, you know, World War II film, but it ended up being great.
Yeah, yeah, like something you've never heard before. Mm-hmm. That's really interesting.
That's awesome. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah. I, this summer, watched a movie that I'm sure you have all heard of called The Meg, and it did not disappoint, I must admit. I am a big fan of going to one terrible shark movie a summer, and I was actually slightly disappointed because it was better than I expected it to be.
That is disappointing.
I know, right? Yeah, it was actually decent. And, well, I guess I should say good for a shark movie, but still,
yeah.
It's very surprising because it is about a megalodon coming out from this depths of an ocean that you've never heard of. But it's got a moody protagonist hero.
Ooh,
you know, a little bit of an alcoholic. You love that. And
good.
Then and then an unlikely romance, of course. There's a cute little girl. She's just there kicking it with her mom. So super random. A giant shark eating people.
Good.
Very fun.
Are there any acts of nature that could even begin to rival Sharknado?
You know, I can't say that, but Dwight from The Office is in there, so that, I guess, could
that
be arguably,
yeah, really
arguably
does.
Is a force of nature
he,
in itself.
I would agree that he is a force of nature.
Yeah, yeah, definitely, I would say. And there's also a lot of technology that's really interesting. Whoa, I know. But very creative. There's a little dog that you... There's what I really liked about the movie. I just am now realizing this, is there's a lot of, like, small characters that you really get attached to that are there for about 5 minutes.
Before getting eaten by the megalodon.
Yeah. The real question
who's to
is,
say, I can't tell you.
Do you now believe in the megalodon?
The real answer is I always believed in the megalodon.
But megalodons, for our listeners, megalodons were real. We're not.
I mean, is it still out there?
Oh, okay, Liz.
Like, are they still?
For a second,
like
I thought you were like,
real.
But do you believe
in dinosaurs? No. Not like in a conspiracy sort of way. Like, do you think they're still out there swimming?
Yeah.
Yes.
Sure.
There we go.
There it is.
Yes.
That's the answer from Katie Chappell.
Megs are real.
The movie that I watched a ton of movies, but one of my favorites was The Other Side of Hope by Aki Kaurismäki. He's a Finnish director, which his name does not give away in any sort of way. He's a very famous, like, film auteur, like, fancy boy. Like, if you think of, like, art house films, he's one of those guys. It's about a Syrian refugee, and he comes to Finland after, like, a long series of stuff. And basically it's about his adventures, his exploits, trying to become a Finnish citizen, which, surprise, doesn't work out, because it's actually pretty hard to be a refugee anywhere. And it's a really moving and emotional movie, just about him trying to find his sister and trying to get along with people, trying to hold down a job at a restaurant. Beautifully shot, well choreographed, some really stunning music. I would definitely recommend it. It's on the Filmstruck and Criterion app, which is an app that everybody should have. But it was really, really fun to watch.
The question, is that a free app, or
okay.
How much does it cost?
Here's the bad news. So Filmstruck, I think, is $5 a month.
Okay.
Criterion is another $5 a month. But if you split it with somebody else, both of them are only $5 a month. Mm-hmm. Not saying that I am doing that, or with whom. With whom. Thank you, Dr. Richardson, for giving me that. But it's worth it because there's a lot of really old, like, critically acclaimed films.
Oh, good. Okay. Have to check it out. Yeah.
That's a good thing.
So it's a human piece rather than a political piece?
I think so. There's definitely politics in the film,
right,
because there sort of has to be. But it's more about this one guy and, like, his journey.
Mm-hmm.
And on the way, you're like, oh, that sucks. Like, what's wrong with our political system?
Right.
Like, this is how this guy has to live for a while.
Right, yeah.
But it is very human. And the whole time I was, like, so drawn to this one refugee. It's also amazing because it's in so many languages.
I was about to ask what language it was.
So, interestingly, there's a lot of Arabic, because that's, like, the common language of a lot
right.
of the refugees,
mm-hmm.
so they speak it. And I could pick out a couple words. Like, every time someone said thank you, I was like, there it is. There's French, there's Finnish, there's German, there's some, I think there's some Japanese. So, like, this director knows his stuff.
Yeah.
And he's got
wow.
just everything in this movie.
So put on subtitles.
Put on subtitles.
Yes.
Or know lots of languages.
That
or be Dr.
Be
Crawford.
Question. Yeah, or be Dr. Crawford.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
With that, let's move on to our TV shows. What have we been watching recently? Katie, do you have yours up?
Yeah, I've got mine up. I have been watching a show. Oh, I actually just finished it. I finished it in a few days. That doesn't matter. I like to call it Pope's Gone Wild. It's actually called The Borgias. It is about...
Do you mean to say the bourgeoisie?
No.
No, the
Borgias. But they are basically the bourgeoisie. It's a man who is, like, I think the first Spanish pope. And so it's very interesting. He definitely buys his way into the papacy. But very interesting about... It's really about his son more than it is about him, I would say. And his son starts out as a cardinal and really has to become the muscle for the operation. So it's really about, there's all sorts of stuff that go on. There's violence. There's,
ooh.
Oh, I know, intrigue. There's incest.
Can't have
we'll
a good
just,
TV show without some incest.
Right, yeah, we're
Game
gonna
of Thrones,
skip
yeah.
past that. And then, there's, They're selling indulgences. It's about what's going on in the Catholic Church at this time. And it's very interesting because I think it's really easy to judge religious figures from this time. But somehow they manage to make the Pope seem ignorant of, like, what's wrong with selling indulgences. And he seems almost like he has a good heart, but also definitely doesn't. So it's all very interesting. Pope has a mistress.
What? Ooh. Okay. Well, what time are we talking about?
This is like late medieval, early Renaissance.
Interesting. Okay. Mm-hmm. So do we see any other famous historical figures that we're going to know?
Yeah, definitely. They make a lot of references to people. Machiavelli's in it. I guess I should have mentioned. Yeah, Machiavelli's in it for several episodes. And then there's the Medicis are featured.
Ooh, yes.
And
Assassin's Creed, I know that.
or, you know, the world famous banking.
Well, that's also true.
Whatever. And then we've got, oh, I know I'm missing someone. They make references to Leonardo da Vinci and other famous.
DiCaprio.
So
yep.
Is it
Leo.
Just all historical fiction, or are they basing this off of stuff that really happened?
They are basing it off of stuff that happened. I don't know if you've ever heard of The Banquet of Chestnuts, but that is an event that takes place. And if you can hear the weird lilt to my voice, that's because it's very naughty. So, you'll have to check it out, because I can't tell you what happened.
Not on
the
Union podcast.
Not on this podcast, yeah.
Awesome.
I recently started rewatching for, like, the fourth time, Community, created by Dan Harmon, because every time I watch it, it gets better and better and better. So, started rewatching that. It's mainly about a group of, I'm going to use the word ragtag, students, all ranging from ages, like, 65 to 18, and they form a study group at this community college, and it's really, the whole show revolves around character. Everything is character. The characters drive the plot of the entire show. The dialogue is fantastic. And Dan Harmon is a genius, although I don't think I would pattern my life after him whatsoever. He is revered in my head as one of the greatest writers because of this show.
Wow.
Awesome. Yeah. So I've heard a lot about it, and I saw a couple episodes when it was on TV. What do you think makes Community different than these other huge, like, cult classics like The Office or Arrested Development?
Parks
or
and
Arrested,
Rec.
Yeah, all of these sorts of things.
I think, well, you can't really base it off of season one, because I think season one was genuinely just an attention grabber for a lot of people, because season two opens up and it's almost like a different show. You just, that's when you get all of the weird quirks of the show. The show is super complex, kind of, and the characters are so complex, and they're normal people. Like, you could see yourself having a conversation with them. They're not necessarily weird in the sense of, like, Dwight or, you know, weird like Andy. They're more their own people, and you know people like them, and I think that's why they just nail every single character, though, and their personality traits. So I think it's different because instead of, you know, things happening and, oh no, like, our office got robbed, or, you know, I don't really watch Parks and Rec, but the stuff that goes on in Parks and Rec, it's not driven by that. It's driven solely by this person said this, and now what are we going to do, because this is blown up.
Fascinating.
That's awesome. The show that I've been watching recently is Disenchantment.
Is that on Netflix?
Yes. If you've ever heard of the Futurama or The Simpsons, which everyone in the world has, even if they haven't seen them, Disenchantment is the next show by the guy who did those. And I was just writing an article about this show, but for the life of me, I cannot remember his name. So hold on just a second. Will one of you just hum something?
Wait, I thought you were...
Matt Groening.
Okay. Oh,
who's that?
Groening. He's the producer and, like, one of the writers directors. Basically, though, Futurama is the future. The Simpsons is the modern day.
Right.
Disenchantment is this
the
really
past.
Clever show. Yes.
Oh,
the
I got
medieval
it.
Medieval times.
Good job,
Katie. She wins tonight. But it's about this princess named Princess Bean, who is, I'm sensing
like
a
Mr.
theme.
Bean?
Well, sort of. But she drinks a little bit too much, and we've all talked about shows, and I don't know what's happening in tonight's episode, but there's
gosh.
A lot of drinking. She's also friends with this elf named Elfo, who is very stupid.
Original.
Like, just really stupid, and he's amazing. And also, she has her own personal demon, and his name
As
is
we
Lucy.
All do.
His name's Lucy.
Oh, I love
Aww.
That. What a
I
cute
do too.
Name.
He's so cute. And it's voiced by Eric Andre, if you know who that comedian is.
Andre.
Very strange.
So, no,
you it's He's very weird. But it's a really funny show. Well worth your time if you like comedies. I think there's only 10 episodes out right now, but that's like the first half of the first season.
Where do we find it?
Netflix.
Okay.
It's right there.
Wow. Would you say it's very similar to... What makes it different than... Other than, like, the setting, what makes it different than The Simpsons or Futurama?
I think The Simpsons is, like, a lot of gags, especially about America and, like, the time that it's happening in. And Futurama is sort of political and a little bit more philosophical. With Disenchantment, I'm trying to think, really. I've seen maybe 5 episodes. So that's a quarter of the first season, and I don't know if I really have a good grasp of it. But basically, it's sort of like growing up. That seems to be the big theme. Because Princess Bean, her dad's like, you have to be the next queen or whatever. You have to be the next ruler. And she's like, I don't wanna, which is super cheesy. But it, like, focuses on that in each episode, like a new aspect of her growing up, even when she's trying not to grow up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
It is really interesting. So with that, let's move to our second to last section on music. And I'll start this one. I've been listening to a band called Owen. And I've been listening to a lot of different bands that this guy has done. The Kinsella Brothers, they started in, like, 1980-something. And they've done so many projects that I really enjoy. Cap'n Jazz and American Football are things that I've talked about on this podcast before. But Owen is a lot more chill. And I'm just going to play, like, 30 seconds to show you, like, in one song, the two different aspects that we can see in Owen, and one of the reasons I really like them. So that's loud. It is loud. I'll give you that. But it's also got, like, that acoustic guitar, which was, like, I can't play the whole song, but it's like the first 4 minutes, and then it just transitions into that. And I really like his voice as well, which you don't get to hear in that. But you'll have to listen to Owen to get the rest of that.
Interesting, yeah. I thought that the guitar-y sound was kind of like going through its goth emo phase in middle school. I don't know if that's accurate for the rest of the music, but those
maybe
are the vibes I got.
But like
the guitar itself is going
sure
through
sure and
that
here's
phase.
Oh, the guitar, it's
yes
just, it's just like 16.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a guitar earlier though. Here it is.
So he grows up through the song.
I like
he does
it.
It's a coming of age song.
It's a coming of age song.
Oh, wow.
That song, by the way, in case you just want to listen to one song, which you shouldn't, is called Everyone's Asleep in the House.
Oh.
Hold on, wait, there's more. Spotify scrolling. But Me. Everyone's Asleep in the House, But Me by Owen.
Wow. Fascinating.
What an emotional song.
Wow. Well, I know I've already talked about this artist on this podcast, but he released more music, and this is Barnes Courtney.
Ooh, yes.
This is called Good Thing. I'll just play a little bit of it. Yeah, so that's just a little bit of the beginning, and he kind of has that foot stomping indie rock, but also he's got a lot of moodier music as well. It's actually a little bit different, I'd say, than some of his other music. A lot of his music tends to be a little bit harder rock, and we also have some ballads by him as well, but I've seen him in concert more than I've seen anybody else in concert, really. I think I've seen him 3 times
wow
or so now, and he is very impressive. He is just electric, and he's up and coming. I was actually watching a show I'll probably talk about in the future called Cloak and Dagger, and I would definitely recommend. But one of his songs was featured, and I got a little excited because he's a little bit unheard of still, but
yeah,
he's kind of reaching out and branching out. So keep an eye open for him.
That's
he's
awesome.
He's going to be out doing great things.
So artists have to change. They
mm-hmm
have to. Like,
right.
They can't be the same sound forever. How do you see Barnes changing?
Mm-hmm.
Especially since he's only just sort of starting to come into the mainstream.
Right, right. Even just from actually his first album, which was 5 songs, I don't even know if it was technically an album, it might have been an EP, but just the transition from that into his second album, and then he just released 2 more songs. We've just seen a lot of diversification. The first 5 songs that he released are a lot more similar to each other. They've got a hard beat, and they've got some rock and drums, and they've got electric guitar, and they are upbeat and kind of wild and edgy.
Mm-hmm.
But we see some ballads on his second album, and we see a lot more acoustic, and there's another song that he played in concert that he hasn't released yet, and I'm really waiting for it to come out, and it's probably one of the most beautiful songs I've ever heard, and it's basically acoustic. And I think it's called Hard to Be Alone or something like that. And it's just all about living alone in the city. And so I think that you're seeing a little bit more of the sensitive sides of him, as well as maybe even some harder sides. So just some more seeing him from on each end of the spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, a guy that I've been listening to recently
there it is.
Whatever. The guy that I found the other day, I don't really know much about him because I just learned about him, but his name is Saint Raymond, and he's kind of...
Is he a saint?
No.
Oh, okay.
Don't know why his name is Saint Raymond, but he only has, like, he has kind of a little mini album out, and then he released 1 song this year so far, just one. So, it's not even, like, a, like, pre to his album or anything. It's just a random song that he released. But, here's one little part of one of his songs that I like so far.
time just to waste it. Breaking the tides and I'm aching. Open the skies as I wake up. Saying goodbye as I wake up. Surfing the wave with my eyes closed. Holding my breath is a no-go.
So, I think it's kind of catchy. It's not too overwhelming because I notice that a lot of songs, if I hear them for too long, like just one song itself, like 1 minute into it, I'm done and I don't want to hear it anymore. But his songs, they're not too in your face. They're not too loud, but there's just enough instruments that you still feel like you're listening to music. It's not like cafe music or something. And I don't know. He kind of has a folky, earthy tone, and I really like it.
I'm still bobbing my head.
Yeah.
I was a fan.
It was good. I'm definitely going to check that out.
I'm also definitely looking up who Saint Raymond is in the Catholic Church to see if there's a connection.
If there's a connection there.
I don't really see anything immediately that jumps off the page.
Well, next episode, Katie discovers the secret truth.
Katie does research. Ha ha ha.
Good stuff. Normally, we like to have an interview with a band or somebody, an artist, something like that. We don't have that. It's the beginning of the semester, and we're all, for some reason, crazy busy right now. But I thought it'd be really fun to add a book section. Talk about a book that we read this summer or recently that we really enjoyed, and then just have a dialogue about that. Katie, would you like to start us off?
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the Joy Luck Club, and the reason that I chose the Joy Luck Club, we've got a lot of Asian American and Asian stories being told right now, which is so important and so cool to see. And so that I just want to keep that trend going. We've got Crazy Rich Asians is out, and we've got To All the Boys I've Loved Before is out on Netflix, another story that kind of is sharing those experiences and normalizing those experiences. The Joy Luck Club is about 8 women, and it's told in a very interesting structure. It starts with the stories of the mothers. There's 4 mothers in the story and then 4 daughters in the story, and it's about the lineage between mothers and daughters, and whether or not sort of your identity is like continued from mother to daughter. And so it's sort of about that idea of daughter is continuing the identity of the mother, which is super interesting. It's also about the mothers are all immigrants, and so they're first generation immigrants, and then they're trying to relate to their second generation immigrant daughters, and there's that struggle of language barriers and cultural differences, and just the mothers have all these expectations of what they're going to give to their daughters, and then their daughters don't understand how to accept them because they don't understand really what their mothers are trying to give to them, which is very interesting.
So how do you see this book? When did it come out, by the way? Do you know?
Great question. I think it was 10, 15 years ago or so. Yeah.
So in that time, how do you see it as being more relevant or more impactful to the current situation that we see across the world, like the increased globalization of the world?
That's a great question, and I'm not sure if I have a great answer to it right now. I think that really you can just see, I think, more the impact that the book has had on people who have read it.
Okay.
And sort of helping people maybe translate their experiences. It was written by a second generation immigrant, Amy Tan, and so it's about her experience sort of, but it's also just about the experience in general. And sort of this idea that all of them have the same but different experiences, which is really interesting. And so I think maybe that rather than it has, these experiences have changed, but rather the reading this experience has helped mold other people's experience and how they've understood their experiences.
Absolutely. Very cool.
One book that I did read over the summer was a collection of short stories by Anthony Doerr, and my favorite one in there was called The Caretaker, and it is also along the lines of a refugee, and he comes to America. It's really tragic in the beginning, and it follows his life and how he tries to redeem himself and almost, in a sense, redeem other people and the things that he has seen in doing small acts to try to balance out all of the bad that he's experienced or feels like he's caused. But that's not really a whole book. But because of that book that I liked so much, I picked back up All the Light We Cannot See, which is also by Anthony Doerr. And that is also a post-World War II, or rather, it takes place during World War II in France. And that, I'm not actually done with it. It switches points of view a lot, but it's extremely interesting. So, Anthony Doerr is somebody to check out.
What do you like about Doerr? What makes him different than lots of the modern authors that we see? He's obviously topping a lot of the charts, but there's also something different about him that, like, just makes him, I would say, a better writer than a lot of the people we see on, like, the top 10 list. What do you see in his writing style that you really like?
I think his voice stands out to me more than anything, because you can just hear it, and he doesn't try too hard. The way you just pick up little gems of what he says sometimes, and they're very, like, simple sentences. It's just, and they're simple comparisons to things, but then you really stop and think about it, and you're like, wow, that was a really good way to put that, and which is oversimplistic, obviously, but just in the way that he uses really simple words to suddenly really, really get your attention on complex things. It's very interesting.
Absolutely. The book that I read this summer is The Pale King, which is the last book by David Foster Wallace. It was actually unfinished at the time of his death.
I would just like to say that in my mind I had a $50 bet going that Clark
David
would
Foster
choose
Wallace.
Yeah, something by David Foster Wallace, and I won. So
yeah.
You owe me $50. Continue.
Okay, well, it's about the IRS in Peoria, Illinois,
obviously,
in the middle of the Midwest, because that's the most interesting thing. But no, it's about boredom. All of David Foster Wallace's novels are about something, about, like, language or entertainment, and this one's about boredom. So he chose the most boring thing that he could think of, and he made it so, so interesting. And he didn't even come close to finishing it, even though he'd been writing it for, I think, 8 years at the time of his death. Not even close to finishing it. But it's just the story of, like, 30 or 40 people, and it just keeps jumping around all of them, and you just get this sort of idea of the office in Peoria, Illinois. And I just love his writing style, and I love David Foster Wallace. As Katie and Liz know, that's why Katie won $50.
It is. I have a question. So what is it that makes the story so interesting? Is it the characters, or is there something particularly that's happening, or is it just the whole idea in itself?
I think it's a lot of the characters in each of the individual sections, which are labeled with that weird S that the IRS actually uses for, like, chapter one is just section one. Each time you get to go into, like, this character's head and go through their thought process. And then later on in the book, like, here's an example. There's this one character who struggles with anxiety a lot, so much that he sweats and he, like, tries to hide it so hard. And then, like, you've got this whole section about him. But then, like, later you'll be reading about this guy at lunch, and then he'll just see that guy. But unless you've paid attention, you won't realize it. But then you're like, I just read 100 pages about this guy. That's ridiculous. So, like, you just keep making these connections throughout all of Wallace's works that are really cool. So it's like putting together a really complex puzzle.
Wow. So the only thing that I ever read by David Foster Wallace was A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again.
Cruise Ship Essay, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
That Ted Kluck forced us to read. And I'm just curious, because to be quite honest, I wasn't the biggest David Foster Wallace fan, to be quite honest. I'm so sorry. But
he was
Clark is shooting me daggers. So in this book that he didn't even finish, spent 8 years doing, first of all, are there a lot of footnotes? And secondly, is it more of a personal essay, like all of the things in A Supposedly Fun Thing?
No, there are a lot of footnotes. That's something he develops about the time that he's writing A Supposedly Fun Thing I'll Never Do Again. He doesn't have that in his early work, which is very interesting to see the transition from zero footnotes to some footnotes to, like, a ton in Infinite Jest, and then he sort of backs off again. So footnotes, yes. There's a lot of stuff in his work that is autobiographical, because that's how writers are. And he actually has a character, the narrator in some sections, is David Wallace, but he never worked at the IRS. But also, I was like, but did he? And then I looked it up, and they were like, no, he didn't. So it's sort of this weird postmodern thing that he's doing there. And it's fiction. There's not a whole lot of plot, but it's really fun to read, and it's really fun to see the characters.
Hmm.
Yeah. So with that, we're moving on to our last section, our last sadly brief section. What are you excited for? What's coming up in the near future that you want to read or watch or listen to that you're just really hyped for?
This is actually already out. I just haven't seen it. But it's, I don't even know actually if I say Black KKK Klansman or Black Klansman.
Yeah, Black Klansman.
Okay, because I just always, I never know what to say. But anyway, I'm so excited to see that. And because I was in Mississippi, it just didn't happen to be playing there in the small town I was at.
What a surprise.
Very surprised. I was 100% shocked. Anyway, I am really excited to see that at some point. I'm sure most of you have already seen it because it's great.
Well,
we should all go watch it.
We should.
All right, the next podcast is actually just going to be the movie. So sorry you don't get to watch it. Maybe we can live stream video
as
well. Yeah,
we'll
figure it out. Yeah.
One of the things that I'm excited about is the new Mission Impossible movie, which has been out for a second, but I've heard that it's really good.
Really?
Which
yeah.
frustrates me, because I like watching the first, like, three because they're so bad, and then they sort of got okay, and I was like, ah, this is less fun to watch because it actually, I like it. And this one's supposed to be, like, critically acclaimed, which makes
no
sense.
No, not critically acclaimed.
Yeah, look it up.
I don't believe you.
The internet
will
tell
you.
It's
all over the internet, and I have not graced that movie with my presence yet.
That's, we're going to see both
Impossible.
Movies.
Yeah, all right.
Liz, what are you excited for?
Okay, so this is total, this may be a rumor, but there have been rumblings.
rumblings.
Internet rumblings all about a Community movie. Dan Harmon always intended to make a movie after Community, the show, was over. And at the very, very end of the show, it just says hashtag 6 seasons in a movie. And there are 6 seasons of the show. So I'm waiting for the movie. And all of the actors recently, they were all together somewhere. So I don't know. I feel like that's about to come out. And if it does, I can die a happy person.
Wow. All right.
That's exciting.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it's been a great first episode of season 2 of Loggeria. Thank you, Liz, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
You didn't do too bad, so you'll be back.
Thank
you. I promise. You're here. Katie, do you agree? Can she come back?
Yeah, I guess.
Okay.
I mean,
good stuff.
Whatever.
We'll make
it
work.
I definitely didn't do as well my first time, so it's fine.
You're not bitter, though.
I'm not bitter.
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you so much for listening to Loggeria, the Arts and Entertainment Podcast. My name's Clark Hubbard.
My name is Katie Chappell.
My name is Elizabeth Caldwell.
And we will talk to you later. Do, 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 do.
Loggeria.